Tim Fleming in the morning on AM 1300 KGLO.
Every Tuesday and Thursday, we get a chance to get caught up with the happenings at Corporate Farmer in Mason City, and we get a chance to visit with Chad Hansen. He's on the live line with me right now. Hey, Chad, how are you?
Doing wonderful. I think with that rockin' music that you intro'd me with, you're trying to get everybody fired up for tax season, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, 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 we're ready to go.
Well, that's good. I guess it's better than some of the other intros you could have used. But
come on, people like tax season, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. I need to probably play that before my appointments to kind of get my clients fired up about taxes, too. They just, for some reason, don't enjoy the bookwork. And maybe that's what we need, is just a little bit more exciting music to get our blood flowing.
I guess, yeah. But, you know, sometimes at the end of going through all the taxes, there's good news. And sometimes
yeah.
at the end of taxes, there's... not so good news. So, you know, it's kind of that 50-50, I think, that has people on edge, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, good thing with us is it doesn't seem like we have the surprises, you know, utilizing the bookkeeping and the planning that we do. It kind of keeps those surprises to a minimum, which, you know, everybody in December, they love those surprises, right? You want that... Christmas present or whatever that kind of you didn't expect, and maybe that New Year's that kind of is memorable. And when it comes back around to getting your taxes done, I think you're kind of avoiding any of those shock and surprises. So we try and keep those to a minimum.
Yeah, I would guess that that's probably a pretty good idea. And you guys, that's something that you strive to do on a case-by-case basis with your clients.
Yeah, a lot of it is just kind of back to that preparation and planning and stuff that we typically do. And, you know, we kind of flip the calendar and into the new year, and so we start that whole process over again. And what that means is January, which, you know, for us, January is typically 1099s and W-2s, right? I mean, that's kind of the deadline that needs to get taken care of here before the 31st, and so answering a lot of questions with those, everybody, you know, kind of forgets because it's something that you deal with once a year, and so, and then you always have those kind of oddballish things that you just don't know how to handle. But, you know, I would say, you know, the biggest questions typically come on the 1099s, and there's no doubt that there's a number of people out there that just kind of, I guess, sweep them under the rug or figure they don't need to do them, and that's not the best approach to handle, you know, those requirements that the government puts on us. Unfortunately, it's something we need to do, and in the past, the enforcement hasn't been real high, and so there's definitely kind of a group that is pretty complacent when it comes to it. But, you know, that is an area that the IRS is really kind of honed in on as something that could make their jobs easier because of the fact that, you know, people sending out 1099s, it kind of allows the computer to do a lot of the work. If you don't report that income on your return, the IRS knows and, you know, sends you out a bill saying this is how much you owe. We've adjusted your return for the information we have. And, you know, you have an opportunity to correct it, but obviously more often than not, it's probably correct. And so, you know, we've really made a push to encourage and educate our clients on why they need to do 1099s and who they need to send them to. And, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding when it comes to that. You know, for our farmers, most of them are aware that they should be sending them to their landlords for the rent they pay them. But then outside of that is where the confusion comes in. And, you know, I try and simplify things as much as possible. One, you know, you're never going to get in trouble for sending somebody a 1099 that you shouldn't have, right? I mean, they should be picking that income up anyway, so it's probably better to be safe than to be sorry. But, you know, if we kind of look at it from the standpoint that any individual, LLC, partnership, anything other than a corporation, and how do we know what's a corporation? You know, typically it's going to have, you know, a name that ends in corp or inc or limited. And then those places we need to send a 1099 unless we bought a product from them. You know, so any services that they provided, you know, can be your the law office that does some work for you. It could be, you know, your vet is something that was added several years ago that people still kind of wonder about. So any of those types of services, you should be providing that. Obviously, it's pretty clear if it's somebody that maybe comes out and does your custom spraying or combining at the end of the year, any of those types of services, that you should be providing them with a 1099. And there are penalties in place. You know, they're probably not significant enough that they scare off the average person, but they are on a per-return basis. Typically, you know, I always get the question of, what if I forget one? Well, I mean, the IRS is going to take kind of, you hope, a common-sense approach to that, in that if you sent out 9 of them and accidentally forgot one, they're going to probably look at it and say, you know, you tried to, everybody makes an error, so they're probably going to waive or not enforce a penalty on a situation like that. But,
yeah,
you know, if you sent out 0, not a lot of effort was put into sending those out, and pretty clear that you're just trying to avoid them, and there, in that case, you're probably looking at the potential of penalties. Now, I've never seen that. In my 20-some years of doing this, I've never seen a penalty assessed. You know, I have had situations where it's pretty clear that the taxpayer was complacent and not sending them out, and they've said, we're going to note that we had this discussion and that they need to be done in the future. And, you know, that kind of puts that black mark on your file that down the road, if you get chosen again to be audited, that's going to be something that they say, okay, did they do it this time or did they not? And if they don't, you're probably not getting a second chance at that point in time. You're probably going to be assessed a penalty. So I guess kind of the point of this is just that, you know, those requirements are out there. We suggest to our clients that they do send those 1099s out so that they're in compliance and don't have problems on their end. You know, we run into some issues sometimes where people won't provide information back. Maybe they don't want to give you their Social Security number. You know, you make some efforts to call them several times and they don't call you back, or, you know, basically kind of give you the runaround. You know, in that case, you know, I always suggest that we at least make a note in the file that our efforts were made and we tried, you know, or attempted to get that information and were unsuccessful. You know, at least at the end of the day, you tried to do your part and somebody else didn't comply with it. Now, if that's somebody that you're paying continuously, if it was a landlord that continues to do that to you over and over again, I think you have to have a serious, you know, thought in your mind as far as whether it's worth continuing that relationship, because they're, you know, jeopardizing you and your return and maybe causing you the possibility of, you know, getting in trouble with the IRS and having a penalty there. But at the end of the day, I think that we've just got to do our part and comply with the rules that, you know, that are out there.
And Chad, too, the other thing I was thinking about the other day, I was reading in this article, and they were talking about, this is the time usually when some of us, whether that's people that live in town or out on the farm, they're scratching their head saying, how long do I have to keep the all of these files? I've got all this stuff. I sent this stuff off to Chad, and he's got this. And how many years of this stuff should we be hanging on to?
Yeah, that's a good question. Something I get, you know, every year this time of the year. And so, you know, as far as the IRS, they can only audit back 3 years. So if you look at the current situation, that would be your 2021 at this point, would be the first year that you'd filed since you haven't filed 2022 yet. So it would be 21, 20, and 19 would be as far back as the IRS can actually audit. For the average person, realistically, they don't probably need anything beyond that other than there could be some stuff that carries over. You know, like on your Iowa return, you would have what you paid in federal or taxes or what you've got a refund, you know. So you may want to at least tack on one more year just for those kind of carryover type scenarios. Maybe even, you know, you had a capital gain or capital loss, more likely, that wasn't fully deducted in the prior year, and so that amount carried over. And so those would be things that would lead you to want to keep, say, 4 years in that instance for the average person. Now, when you get into a business, we typically suggest a little bit longer time frame that you retain those records, just because, you know, you have more of those carryover items, specifically, you know, depreciation. You know, most of your equipment would depreciate. It used to be for farm equipment, 7 years was kind of the standard there. And so, you know, we would suggest to our clients that they keep 7 years worth of records. That way they have proof of a purchase on an item that might still be on depreciation. You know, some of that's been condensed down. A lot of that depreciation for farmers has been 5 years here since some of the stimulus packages and stuff have been passed. So, you know, I've heard or seen in publications, you know, 5 years, somewhere in that 5 to 7 for anybody that's in a business, I said would be ideal. If you're really trying to get rid of junk, you could probably get away with 5 years if you want to be safe and not sorry. You know, we typically suggest 7 years is the ideal amount of returns and information to retain. You know, usually when I have these conversations, my clients say, you know, well, I've got it back to, you know, 1965 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you're pretty safe to start eliminating some of those things at this point in time. You know, things that are important still to keep would be obviously any details of land purchases or capital items that you still have, just so that you could prove basis in those items if you were ever to sell them. But other than that, I mean, most everything else, you could get rid of all of the receipts and copies of bank statements and all that stuff back beyond that point in time. You know, so again, to answer your question, I think you're going to see 5 on the kind of one end and 7 on the more conservative end as far as what you should retain for record keeping.
Yeah, then the other part of the article that I got a kick out of was when they were talking about this isn't something that goes into the recycle bin then. And it's pretty common sense. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of numbers, a lot of information, a lot of things that you don't want showing up. You got to destroy them properly.
Yeah, and I think that security is important, whether it's just, you know, with paper records, which is, you know, what we used to be worried about was that maybe you throw that in the garbage and the garbage gets ripped up by a dog and it's all over half the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now all the neighbors have that information. Well, those days are almost all but gone at this point in time. I mean, obviously, if you've got paper records, go ahead and shred them or burn them. You know, my father-in-law, he would always have that burn barrel out behind the house at the farm, and, you know, when he needed a little break from everybody, specifically probably my mother-in-law. He would go out there and, you know, stand by the barrel and throw all those papers in there and play with the dogs for a little while. But, you know, either way is good. But, you know, anymore, a lot of those records are retained, you know, in electronic form.
Right.
And so what are you doing there to protect those records, you know? Do you have them on your computer? Are they encrypted? I mean, obviously you can take this, you know, way out there when it comes to any of that cyber-type security stuff. But, you know, I mean, when you're emailing that stuff to maybe your banker or whoever you need to get those records to, be mindful, I guess, of where that stuff is going and where it's being stored, because that's just as important as, you know, kind of the old days when we'd have that piece of paper and, you know, worried about who might come across it to get a Social Security number off there, or, like you say, maybe just know your financial business. But, yeah, those things are still important and probably even more important today than they were before, because we were worried about the neighbor, and now we've got to be worried about anybody anywhere in the globe getting information.
It can be a scary thing out there if you don't take care of it properly.
Yeah, and can make a real mess of your life, no doubt, when you are compromised as far as that personal and financial information. It can wreak havoc and last a long time and a lot of cleanup. So you want to do your due diligence in order to kind of keep those things under wraps. That's definitely for sure.
So here we are, you know, we're early, mid-January now as we're talking, Chad, and it won't be long, and you guys will really dial it up and get very, very busy doing taxes for folks. You get a chance to catch your breath a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this kind of part of January is really, like I said, about answering questions and helping people get those informational returns. One big thing coming up here is, January 15th is the time where our farmers can make a tax estimate for last year. Unlike, you know, you and I, where we get a paycheck and we have taxes taken out of our paychecks each week or pay period or whatever, the farmers don't have that, and other businesses are required to make quarterly estimates to kind of comply with paying those taxes in throughout the year. For our farmers, since it's such an up and down kind of cycle of incomes, they're allowed to typically file by March 1st and not have to make those estimates throughout the year. But that's becoming increasingly difficult with just how slow some of the 1099 things get out to our clients. We've kind of started suggesting that they consider making an estimate payment here in January in order to extend that deadline to April 15th. People wonder, what does that entail, or how do I know what to pay then in January in order to do that? And so, you know, it's basically the lesser of two things. It's lesser of the amount that you owed in the prior year. So this would be, what did you owe in 2021? You know, if you pay that here in January, then you've got until April 15th to file. You don't have to worry about the March 1 deadline. Or it can be two-thirds of the tax that you expect to owe here in 2022. So it'd be the lower of those two amounts, and hopefully you've done some planning and figured out what that amount that you expect to owe in 2022. I mean, you may need to fine-tune it a little bit if you're waiting on, you know, the details of your investments and maybe a K-1 or whatever, that you kind of just guessed at what that amount might be. But you should be able to get that relatively close, and you can pin down, you know, what's going to be the less amount. Typically, you know, right now you would assume that 21 would be that lesser amount, since 2022 was pretty good year as far as prices and things. But I mean, that might be different for each situation. So I guess for those listening, that's maybe something to think about here as we approach January 15th, is do you want to do that? Maybe you're down in Florida or Arizona, and you're going to be gone, you know, until things warm up. And so you just want to make that payment now, and then you can deal with the taxes when you get back, you know, in early April. So that's a great option there for a situation like that for the snowbirds, not to have to worry about March 1 anymore. So I think that's increasingly being common for farmers to do that, and I think, you know, just trying to get the word out that that's available if somebody hasn't brought it to your attention at this point.
Good info this week. As always, Chad, somebody needs to touch base with you. How can they get that done, a corporate farmer?
Super easy. Just give us a call, 800-472-6931, or you can always check us out online at corporatefarmer.com.
Chad Hansen, great to talk to you.
You too, Tim. Thank
Take
you.
Take care. It's Chad Hansen with us, everybody. He is the president at Corporate Farmer in Mason City on AM 1300 KGLO.